which you call motion pictures, and in collections of words, which you call books. From the highest mountain it has been shouted. In the lowest place its whisper has been heard. Through the corridors of all human experience has this truth been echoed. Love is the answer. Yet you have not listened. Now come you to this conversation, asking God again what God has told you countless times in countless ways. Yet I will tell you again, here. Will you listen now? Will you truly hear? What do you think brought you to this? How does it come to pass that you are listening to this? Do you think I know not what I am doing? There are no coincidences in the universe. I have heard the crying of your heart. I have seen the searching of your soul. I know how deeply you have desired the truth. In pain have you called out for it, and in joy. Unendingly have you beseeched me. Show myself. Explain myself. Reveal myself. I am doing so here, in terms so plain, you cannot misunderstand. In language so simple, you cannot be confused. In vocabulary so common, you cannot get lost in the verbiage. So go ahead now, ask me anything, anything. I will contrive to bring you the answer. The whole universe will I use to do this, so be on the lookout. This is far from my only tool. You may ask a question, then put this down, but watch, listen. The words to the next song you hear, the information in the next article you read, the storyline of the next movie you watch, the chance utterance of the next person you meet, or the whisper of the next river, the next ocean, the next breeze that caresses your ear. All these devices are mine. All these avenues are open to me. I will speak to you if you will listen. I will come to you if you will invite me. I will show you then that I have always been there, always.
I have searched for the path to God all my life.
I know you have.
And now, I have found it, and I can't believe it. It feels like I'm sitting here talking to myself.
You are.
That does not seem like what a communication with God would feel like.
You want bells and whistles? I'll see what I can arrange.
You know, don't you, that there are those who will call this a blasphemy, especially if you keep showing up as such a wise guy.
Let me explain something to you. You have this idea that God shows up in only one way in life. That's a very dangerous idea. It stops you from seeing God all over. If you think God looks only one way, or sounds only one way, or is only one way, you're going to look right past me night and day. You'll spend your whole life looking for God and not finding her, because you're looking for a him. I use this as an example. It has been said that if you don't see God in the profane and the profound, you're missing half the story. That is a great truth. God is in the sadness and the laughter, in the bitter and the sweet. There is a divine purpose behind everything, and therefore a divine presence in everything.
Well, I once began writing a book called God is a Salami Sandwich.
That would have been a very good book. I gave you that inspiration. Why didn't you write it?
Well, it felt like blasphemy, or at the very least, horribly irreverent.
You mean wonderfully irreverent. What gave you the idea that God is only reverent? God is the up and the down, the hot and the cold, the left and the right, the reverent and the irreverent. Think you that God cannot laugh? Did you imagine that God doesn't enjoy a good joke? Is it your knowing that God is without humor? I tell you, God invented humor. Must you speak in hushed tones when you speak to me? Are slang words or tough language outside my ken? I tell you, you can speak to me as you would speak with your best friend. Do you think there is a word I haven't heard? A sight I have not seen? A sound I do not know? Is it your thought that I despise some of these, while I love the others? I tell you, I despise nothing. None of it is repulsive to me. It's life, and life is the gift, the unspeakable treasure, the holy of holies. I am life, for I am the stuff life is. Its every aspect has a divine purpose. Nothing exists, nothing, without a reason understood and approved by God.
How can this be? How can this be? What of the evil which has been created by man?
You cannot create a thing, not a thought, an object, an event, no experience of any kind, which is outside of God's plan. For God's plan is for you to create anything, everything, whatever you want. In such freedom lies the experience of God being God. And this is the experience for which I created you, and life itself. Evil is that which you call evil. Yet even that I love, for it is only through that which you call evil that you can know good, only through that which you call the work of the devil that you can know and do the work of God. I do not love hot more than I love cold, high more than low, left more than right. It's all relative. It is all part of what is. I do not love good more than I love bad. Hitler went to heaven. When you understand this, you will understand God.
But I have been raised to believe that good and bad do exist, that right and wrong are opposed, that some things are just not okay, not all right, not acceptable in the sight of God.
Everything is acceptable in the sight of God, for how can God not accept that which is? To reject a thing is to deny that it exists. To say that it is not okay is to say that it is not a part of me, and that's impossible. Yet, hold to your beliefs and stay true to your values, for these are the values of your parents, of your parents' parents, of your friends, and of your society. They form the structure of your life, and to lose them would be to unravel the fabric of your experience. Still, examine them one by one. Review them piece by piece. Do not dismantle the house, but look at each brick and replace those which appear broken, which no longer support the structure. Your ideas about right and wrong are just that, ideas. They are the thoughts which form the shape and create the substance of who you are. There would be only one reason to change any of these, only one purpose in making an alteration, if you are not happy with who you are. Only you can know if you are happy. Only you can say of your life, "This is my creation in which I am well pleased." If your values serve you, hold to them, argue for them, fight to defend them. Yet seek to fight in a way which harms no one. Harm is not a necessary ingredient in healing.
You know, you say hold to your values at the same time you say our values are all wrong. Help me with this.
I have not said your values are wrong, but neither are they right. They're simply judgments, assessments, decisions. For the most part, they are decisions made not by you, but by someone else. Your parents, perhaps, your religion, your teachers, historians, politicians. Very few of the value judgments you have incorporated into your truth are judgments you yourself have made based on your own experience. Yet experience is what you came here for, and out of your experience were you to create yourself. You have created yourself out of the experience of others. If there were such a thing as sin, this would be it, to allow yourself to become what you are because of the experience of others. This is the sin you have committed, all of you. You do not await your own experience. You accept the experience of others as gospel, literally. And then, when you encounter the actual experience for the first time, you overlay what you think you already know onto the encounter. If you did not do this, you might have a wholly different experience, one that might render your original teacher or source wrong. In most cases, you don't want to make your parents, your schools, your religions, your traditions, your holy scriptures wrong, so you deny your own experience in favor of what you have been told to think. Nowhere can this be more profoundly illustrated than in your treatment of human sexuality. Everyone knows that the sexual experience can be the single most loving, most exciting, most powerful, most exhilarating, most renewing, most energizing, most affirming, most intimate, most uniting, most recreative physical experience of which humans are capable. Having discovered this experientially, you have chosen to accept instead the prior judgments, opinions, and ideas about sex promulgated by others, all of whom have a vested interest in how you think. These opinions, judgments, and ideas have run directly contradictory to your own experience. Yet, because you are loath to make your teachers wrong, you convince yourself it must be your experience that is wrong. The result is that you have betrayed your highest truth about this subject, with devastating results. You have done the same thing with money. Every time in your life that you have had lots and lots of money, you felt great. You felt great receiving it, and you felt great spending it. There was nothing bad about it, nothing evil, nothing inherently wrong. Yet you have so deeply ingrained within you the teachings of others on this subject that you have rejected your experience in favor of truth. Having adopted this truth as your own, you have formed thoughts around it, thoughts which are creative. You have thus created a personal reality about money which pushes it away from you. For why would you seek to attract that which is not good? Amazingly, you have created the same contradiction around God. Everything your heart experiences about God tells you that God is good. Everything your teachers teach you about God tells you God is bad. Your heart tells you God is to be loved without fear. Your teachers tell you God is to be feared, for he is a vengeful God. You are to live in fear of God's wrath, they say. You are to tremble in his presence. Your whole life through, you are to fear the judgment of the Lord, for the Lord is just, you are told. And God knows you will be in trouble when you confront the terrible justice of the Lord. You are therefore to be obedient to God's commands, or else. Above all, you are not to ask such logical questions as, if God wanted strict obedience to his laws, why did he create the possibility of those laws being violated? Ah, your teachers tell you, because God wanted you to have free choice. Yet what kind of choice is free when to choose one thing over the other brings condemnation? How is free will free when it is not your will but someone else's which must be done? Those who teach you this would make a hypocrite of God. You are told that God is forgiveness and compassion. Yet if you do not ask for this forgiveness in the right way, if you do not come to God properly, your plea will not be heard, your cry will go unheeded. Even this would not be so bad if there were only one proper way. But there are as many proper ways being taught as there are teachers to teach them. Most of you, therefore, spend the bulk of your adult life searching for the right way to worship, to obey, and to serve God. The irony of all this is that I do not want your worship. I do not need your obedience. And it is not necessary for you to serve me. These behaviors are the behaviors historically demanded of their subjects by monarchs, usually egomaniacal, insecure, tyrannical monarchs at that. They're not godly demands in any sense, and it seems remarkable that the world hasn't by now concluded that the demands are counterfeit, having nothing to do with the needs or desires of deity. Deity has no needs. All that is exactly that, all that is. It therefore wants or lacks nothing, by definition. If you choose to believe in a God who somehow needs something and has such hurt feelings if he doesn't get it that he punishes those from whom he expected to receive it, Then you choose to believe in a God much smaller than I am. You truly are children of a lesser God. No, my children, please let me assure you again that I am without needs. I require nothing. This does not mean I am without desires. Desires and needs are not the same thing, although many of you have made them so in your present lifetime. Desire is the beginning of all creation. It is first thought. It is a grand feeling within the soul. It is God choosing what next to create. And what is God's desire? I desire first to know and experience myself in all my glory, to know who I am. Before I invented you and all the worlds of the universe, it was impossible for me to do so. Second, I desire that you shall know and experience who you really are through the power I have given you to create and experience yourself in whatever way you choose. Third, I desire for the whole life process to be an experience of constant joy, continuous creation, never-ending expansion, and total fulfillment in each moment of now. I have established a perfect system whereby these desires may be realized. They are being realized now. In this very moment, the only difference between you and me is that I know this. In the moment of your total knowing, which moment could come upon you at any time, you too will feel as I do always, totally joyful, loving, accepting, blessing, and grateful. These are the five attitudes of God. And before we are through with this dialogue, I will show you how the application of these attitudes in your life now can and will bring you to godliness. All of this is a very long answer to a very short question. Yes, hold to your values, so long as you experience that they serve you. Yet look to see whether the values you serve with your thoughts, words, and actions bring to the space of your experience the highest and best idea you ever had about you. Examine your values one by one. Hold them up to the light of public scrutiny. If you can tell the world who you are and what you believe without breaking stride or hesitating, you are happy with yourself. There is no reason to continue much further in this dialogue with me because you have created a self and a life for the self, which needs no improvement. You have reached perfection.
Well, my life is not perfect, nor is it close to being perfect. I am not perfect. I am, in fact, a bundle of imperfections. Sometimes I wish with all my heart, that I could correct these imperfections, that I could know what causes my behaviors, what sets up my downfalls, what keeps getting in my way. That's why I've come to you, I guess. I haven't been able to find the answers on my own.
I'm glad you came. I've always been here to help you. I'm here now.
You don't have to find the answers on your own. You never had to.
Yet it seems so presumptuous to simply sit down and dialogue with you this way, much less imagine that you, God, are responding. I mean, this is crazy.
I see. The authors of the Bible were all sane, but you are crazy.
The Bible writers were witnesses to the life of Christ and faithfully recorded what they heard and saw.
Correction. Most of the New Testament writers never met or saw Jesus in their lives. They lived many years after Jesus left the earth. They wouldn't have known Jesus of Nazareth if they walked into him on the street.
But...
The Bible writers were great believers and great historians. They took the stories which had been passed down to them and to their friends by others, elders, from elder to elder, until finally a written record was made. And not everything of the Bible authors was included in the final document. Already churches had sprung up around the teachings of Jesus. And as it happens, whenever and wherever people gather in groups around a powerful idea, there were certain individuals within these churches or enclaves who determined what parts of the Jesus story were going to be told and how. This process of selecting and editing continued throughout the gathering, writing, and publishing of the Gospels and the Bible. Even several centuries after the original scriptures were committed to writing, a high council of the church determined yet one more time which doctrines and truths were to be included in the then official Bible, and which would be unhealthy or premature to reveal to the masses. And there have been other holy scriptures as well, each placed in writing in moments of inspiration by otherwise ordinary men, none of whom were any more crazy than you. But let's drive to the heart of your question. Why do you think it's crazy for you to be able to have a dialogue with God? Do you not believe in prayer?
Yes, of course, but that's different. Prayer for me has always been one way. I ask, and God remains immutable.
God has never answered a prayer?
Oh, yes, of course, but never verbally, you see. Oh, I've had all kinds of things happen in my life that I was convinced was an answer, a very direct answer to prayer. But God has never spoken to me.
I see. So this God in which you believe, this God can do anything. He just cannot speak.
Of course God can speak, if God wants to. It just doesn't seem probable that God would speak to me, that God would want to speak to me.
This is the root of every problem you experience in your life, for you do not consider yourself worthy enough to be spoken to by God. Good heavens, how can you ever expect to hear my voice if you don't imagine yourself to be deserving enough to even be spoken to? I tell you this, I am performing a miracle right now, for not only am I speaking to you, but to every person who is listening to these words. To each of them am I now speaking. I know who every one of them is. I know now who will find their way to these words. And I know that, just as with all my other communications, some will be able to hear, and some will be able to only listen, but will hear nothing.
I have 100 questions, you know, 1,000, 1,000,000. And the problem is, I sometimes don't know where to begin.
Just start somewhere. Go ahead, right now.
When will my life finally take off? What does it take to get it together and achieve even a modicum of success? Can the struggle ever end?
Good. Now we're getting to it. Don't apologize for these questions. These are the questions men and women have been asking for hundreds of years. The questions were so silly they wouldn't be asked over and over again by each succeeding generation. So let's go to question one. I've established laws in the universe that make it possible for you to have, to create, exactly what you choose. These laws cannot be violated, nor can they be ignored. You are following these laws right now, even as you listen to this. You cannot not follow the law, for these are the way things work. You cannot step aside from this. You cannot operate outside of it. Every minute of your life, you have been operating inside of it, and everything you have ever experienced, you have thusly created. You are in a partnership with God. We share an eternal covenant. My promise to you is to always give you what you ask. Your promise is to ask, to understand the process of the asking and the answering. I've already explained this process to you once. I'll do so again so that you clearly understand it. You are a threefold being. You consist of body, mind, and spirit. You could also call these the physical, the non-physical, and the metaphysical. This is the Holy Trinity, and it has been called by many names. That which you are, I am. I am manifested as three in one. Some of your theologians have called this Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The psychiatrists have recognized this triumvirate and called it conscious, subconscious, and superconscious. Your philosophers have called it the id, the ego, and the superego. Science calls this energy, matter, and antimatter. Poets speak of mind, heart, and soul. New Age thinkers refer to body, mind, and spirit. Your time is divided into past, present, and future. Could this not be the same as subconscious, conscious, and superconscious? Space is likewise divided into three, here, there, and the space between. It is defining and describing this space between that becomes difficult, elusive. The moment you begin defining or describing, the space you describe becomes here or there. Yet we know this space between exists. It is what holds here and there in place, just as the eternal now holds before and after in place. These three aspects of you are actually three energies. You might call them thought, word, and action. All three put together produce a result, which in your language and understanding is called feeling or experience. Your soul, subconscious, id, spirit, past, is the sum total of every feeling you've ever had, created. Your awareness of some of these is called your memory. When you have a memory, you are said to remember. That is, to put back together, to reassemble the parts. When you reassemble all of the parts of you, you will have remembered who you really are. The process of creation starts with thought, an idea, conception, visualization. Everything you see was once someone's idea. Nothing exists in your world that did not first exist as pure thought. This is true of the universe as well. Thought is the first level of creation. Next comes the word. Everything you say is a thought expressed. It is creative and sends forth creative energy into the universe. Words are more dynamic, thus some might say more creative than thought, because words are a different level of vibration from thought. They disrupt, change, alter, affect the universe with greater impact. Words are the second level of creation. Next comes action. Actions are words moving. Words are thoughts expressed. Thoughts are ideas formed. Ideas are energies come together. Energies are forces released. Forces are elements existent. Elements are particles of God, portions of all, the stuff of everything. The beginning is God. The end is action. Action is God creating, or God experienced. Your thought about yourself is that you are not good enough, not wondrous enough, not sinless enough to be a part of God, in partnership with God. You have denied for so long who you are that you have forgotten who you are. This has not occurred by coincidence. This is not happenstance. It is all part of the divine plan. For you could not claim, create, experience who you are if you already were it. It was necessary first for you to release, deny, forget your connection to me in order to fully experience it by fully creating it, by calling it forth. For your grandest wish and my grandest desire was for you to experience yourself as the part of me you are. You are therefore in the process of experiencing yourself by creating yourself anew in every single moment, as am I, through you. Do you see the partnership? Do you grasp its implications? It is a holy collaboration, truly a holy communion. Life will take off for you then, when you choose for it to. You have not so chosen as yet. You have procrastinated, prolonged, protracted, protested. Now it is time that you promulgated and produced what you have been promised. To do this, you must believe the promise and live it. You must live the promise of God. The promise of God is that you are his son, her offspring, its likeness, his equal. Here is where you get hung up. You can accept his son, offspring, likeness, but you recoil at being called his equal. It is too much to accept. Too much bigness, too much wonderment, too much responsibility. For if you are God's equal, that means nothing is being done to you and all things are created by you. There can be no more victims, no more villains, only outcomes of your thought about a thing. I tell you this, all you see in your world is the outcome of your idea about it. Do you want your life to truly take off? Then change your idea about it, about you. Think, speak, and act as the God you are. Of course, this will separate you from many, most of your fellow men. They will call you crazy. They will say you blaspheme. They will eventually have enough of you. They will attempt to crucify you. They will do this not because they think you are living in a world of your own illusions. Most men are gracious enough to allow you your private entertainments. But because sooner or later, others will become attracted to your truth, for the promises it holds for them. Here is where your fellow men will interfere, for here is where you will begin to threaten them. For your simple truth, simply lived, will offer more beauty, more comfort, more peace, more joy, and more love of self and others than anything your earthly fellows could contrive. And that truth adopted would mean the end of their ways. It would mean the end of hatred and fear and bigotry and war, the end of the condemning and killing that has gone on in my name, the end of might is right, the end of purchase through power, the end of loyalty and homage through fear, the end of the world as they know it, and as you have created it thus far. So be ready, kind soul, for you will be vilified and spat upon, called names and deserted, and finally they will accuse you, try you, and condemn you, all in their own ways, from the moment you accept and adopt your holy cause, the realization of self. Why then do it? Because you are no longer concerned with the acceptance or approval of the world. You are no longer satisfied with what that has brought you. You are no longer pleased with what it has given others. You want the pain to stop, the suffering to stop, the illusion to end. You've had enough of this world as it presently is. You seek a newer world. Seek it no longer. Now, call it forth.
Yes, well, can you help me to better understand how to do that?
Yes. Go first to your highest thought about yourself. Imagine the you that you would be if you lived that thought every day. Imagine what you would think, do, and say, and how you would respond to what others do and say. Do you see any difference between that projection and what you think, do, and say now?
Yes. Yes, I see a great deal of difference.
Good. You should. Since we know that right now you are not living your highest vision of yourself. Now, having seen the differences between where you are and where you want to be, begin to change. Consciously change your thoughts, words, and actions to match your grandest vision. This will require tremendous mental and physical effort. It will entail constant, moment-to-moment monitoring of your every thought, word, and deed. It will involve continued choice-making, consciously. This whole process is a massive move to consciousness. What you will find out if you undertake this challenge is that you've spent half your life unconscious. That is to say, unaware on a conscious level of what you are choosing in the way of thoughts, words, and deeds until you experience the aftermath of them. Then when you experience these results, you deny that your thoughts, words, and deeds had anything to do with them. This is a call to stop such unconscious living. It is a challenge to which your soul has called you from the beginning of time.
That kind of continual mental monitoring seems as though it might be terribly exhausting.
It could be, until it becomes second nature. In fact, it is your second nature. It is your first nature to be unconditionally loving. It is your second nature to choose to express your first nature, your true nature, consciously.
Excuse me, but wouldn't this kind of non-stop editing of everything I think, say, and do make Jack a dull boy?
Never. Different, yes. Dull, no. Was Jesus dull? I don't think so. Was the Buddha boring to be around? People flocked, begged to be in his presence. No one who's attained mastery is dull. Unusual, perhaps. Extraordinary, perhaps, but never dull. So, do you want your life to take off? Begin at once to imagine it the way you want it to be, and move into that. Check every thought, word, and action that does not fall into harmony with that. Move away from those. When you have a thought that is not in alignment with your higher vision, change to a new thought, then and there. When you say a thing that is out of alignment with your grandest idea, make a note not to say something like that again. When you do a thing that is misaligned with your best intention, decide to make that the last time. And make it right with whomever was involved, if you can.
I've heard this before, but I've always railed against it because it seems so dishonest. I mean, if you're sick as a dog, you're not supposed to admit it. If you're broke as a pauper, you're never supposed to say it. If you're upset as hell, you're not supposed to show it. Reminds me of the joke about the three people who were sent to hell. One was a Catholic, one was a Jew, one was a New Ager. The devil said to the Catholic, sneeringly, "Well, how are you enjoying the heat?" And the Catholic sniffed, I'm offering it up." The devil then asked the Jew, "And how are you enjoying the heat?" The Jew said, "So what else could I expect but more hell?" Finally, the devil approached the New Ager. "Heat," the New Ager asked, perspiring. "What heat?"
It's a good joke. But I'm not talking about ignoring the problem or pretending it isn't there. I'm talking about noticing the circumstance and then telling your highest truth about it. If you're broke, you're broke. It's pointless to lie about it and actually debilitating to try to manufacture a story about it so as not to admit it. Yet it's your thought about it. Broke is bad. This is horrible. I'm a bad person because good people who work hard and really try never go broke, etc. That rules how you experience brokenness. It's your words about it. I'm broke. I haven't a dime. I don't have any money. That dictates how long you stay broke. It's your actions surrounding it, feeling sorry for yourself, sitting around despondent, not trying to find a way out because what's the use anyway? That creates your long-term reality. The first thing to understand about the universe is that no condition is good or bad. It just is. So stop making value judgments. The second thing to know is that all conditions are temporary. Nothing stays the same. Nothing remains static. Which way a thing changes depends on you.
Excuse me, but I have to interrupt you here again. What about the person who's sick, but has the faith that will move mountains and so thinks, says, believes he's going to get better, only to die 6 weeks later? How does that square with all this positive thinking, affirmative action stuff?
That's good. You're asking the tough questions. You're not simply taking my word for any of this. There is a place on down the line when you'll have to take my word for this, because eventually you'll find that we can discuss this thing forever, you and I, until there's nothing left to do but try it or deny it. But we're not at that place yet. So let's keep the dialogue going. Let's keep talking. The person who has the faith to move mountains and die 6 weeks later has moved mountains for 6 weeks. That may have been enough for him. He may have decided on the last hour of the last day, okay, I've had enough. I'm ready to go on now to another adventure. You may not have known of that decision because he may not have told you. The truth is he may have made that decision quite a bit earlier, days, weeks earlier, and not have told you, not have told anyone. You have created a society in which it is very not okay to want to die. Very not okay to be very okay with death. Because you don't want to die, you can imagine anyone wanting to die, no matter what their circumstances or condition. But there are many situations in which death is preferable to life, which I know you can imagine if you think about it for even a little bit. If these truths don't occur to you, they're not that self-evident. When you are looking in the face of someone else who is choosing to die, and the dying person knows this, she can feel the level of acceptance in the room regarding her decision. Have you ever noticed how many people wait until the room is empty before they die? Some even have to tell their loved ones, "No, really, go. Get a bite to eat. Or go get some sleep. I'm fine. I'll see you in the morning." And then when the loyal guard leaves, so does the soul from the body of the guarded. If they told their assembled relatives and friends, I just want to die, they would really hear it. Oh, you don't mean that. Or, now don't talk that way. Or, hang in there. Or, please don't leave me. The entire medical profession is trained to keep people alive, rather than keeping people comfortable so that they can die with dignity. You see, to a doctor or a nurse, death is failure. To a friend or relative, death is disaster. Only to the soul is death a relief, a release. The greatest gift you can give the dying is to let them die in peace, not thinking that they must hang on or continue to suffer or worry about you at this most crucial passage in their life. So this is very often what has happened in the case of the man who says he's going to live, believes he's going to live, even prays to live, that at the soul level, he has changed his mind. It is time now to drop the body to free the soul for other pursuits. When the soul makes this decision, nothing the body does can change it. Nothing the mind thinks can alter it. It is at the moment of death that we learn who in the body-mind-soul triumvirate is running things. All your life you think you are your body. Some of the time you think you are your mind. It is at the time of your death that you find out who you really are. Now, there are also times when the body and the mind are just not listening to the soul. This, too, creates the scenario you describe. The most difficult thing for people to do is hear their own soul. Notice that so few do. Now, it happens often that the soul makes a decision that it is time to leave the body. The body and the mind, ever servants of the soul, hear this, and the process of extrication begins. Yet the mind, ego, doesn't want to accept. After all, this is the end of its existence. So it instructs the body to resist death. This the body does gladly, since it too does not want to die. The body and the mind, ego, receive great encouragement, great praise for this from the outside world, the world of its creation. So the strategy is confirmed. Now, at this point, everything depends on how badly the soul wants to leave. If there's no great urgency here, the soul may say, all right, you win. I'll stick around with you a little longer. But if the soul is very clear that staying does not serve its higher agenda, that there is no further way it can evolve through this body, the soul is going to leave, and nothing will stop it. Nor should anything try to. The soul is very clear that its purpose is evolution. That is its sole purpose, and its sole purpose. It is not concerned with the achievements of the body or the development of the mind. These are all meaningless to the soul. The soul is also clear that there is no great tragedy involved in leaving the body. In many ways, the tragedy is being in the body. So you have to understand the soul sees this whole death thing differently. It, of course, sees the whole life thing differently, too. And that is the source of much of the frustration and anxiety one feels in one's life. The frustration and anxiety comes from not listening to one's soul.
Okay, so how could I best listen to my soul? If the soul is the boss, really, how can I make sure I get those memos from the front office?
The first thing you might do is get clear about what the soul is after and stop making judgments about it.
I'm making judgments about my own soul?
I just showed you how you judge yourself for wanting to die. You also judge yourself for wanting to live, truly live. You judge yourself for wanting to laugh, wanting to cry, wanting to win, wanting to lose, for wanting to experience joy and love. Especially do you judge yourself for that.
I do.
Somewhere you've come across the idea that to deny yourself joy is godly, that not to celebrate life is heavenly. Denial, you have told yourself, is goodness.
Are you saying it's bad?
It is neither good nor bad. It is simply denial. If you feel good after denying yourself, then in your world that is goodness. If you feel bad, then it's badness. Most of the time you can't decide. You deny yourself this or that because you tell yourself you are supposed to. Then you say, that was a good thing to do, but wonder why you don't feel good. And so the first thing to do is stop making these judgments against yourself. Learn What is the soul's desire? And go with that. Go with the soul. What the soul is after is the highest feeling of love you can imagine. This is the soul's desire. This is its purpose. The soul is after the feeling. Not the knowledge, but the feeling. It already has the knowledge, but knowledge is conceptual. Feeling is experiential. The soul wants to feel itself, and thus to know itself in its own experience. The highest feeling is the experience of unity with all that is. This is the great return to truth for which the soul yearns. This is the feeling of perfect love. Perfect love is to feeling what perfect white is to color. Many think that white is the absence of color. It is not. It is the inclusion of all color. White is every other color that exists combined. So, too, love is not the absence of an emotion. Hatred, anger, lust, jealousy, covetousness. But the summation of all feeling. It is the sum total, the aggregate amount, the everything. Thus, for the soul to experience perfect love, it must experience every human feeling. How can I have compassion on that which I don't understand? How can I forgive in another that which I have never experienced in myself? So we see both the simplicity and the awesome magnitude of the soul's journey. We understand at last what it is up to. The purpose of the human soul is to experience all of it, so that it can be all of it. How can it be up if it has never been down? Left if it has never been right? How can it be warm if it knows not cold? Good if it denies evil? Obviously, the soul cannot choose to be anything if there's nothing to choose from. For the soul to experience its grandeur, it must know what grandeur is. This it cannot do if there's nothing but grandeur. And so the soul realizes that grandeur only exists in the space of that which is not grand. The soul, therefore, never condemns that which is not grand, but blesses, seeing in it a part of itself which must exist for another part of itself to manifest. The job of the soul, of course, is to cause us to choose the grandeur, to select the best of who you are without condemning that which you do not select. This is a big task, taking many lifetimes, for you are wont to rush to judgment, to call a thing wrong or bad or not enough, rather than to bless what you do not choose. You do worse than condemn. You actually seek to do harm to that which you do not choose. You seek to destroy it. There is a person, place, a thing with which you do not agree, you attack it. There's a religion that goes against yours, you make it wrong. If there's a thought that contradicts yours, you ridicule it. If there's an idea other than yours, you reject it. In this you err, for you create only half a universe, and you cannot even understand your half when you have rejected out of hand the other.
Well, this is all very profound, and I thank you. No one has ever said these things to me, at least not with such simplicity, and I am trying to understand. Really, I am. Yet some of this is difficult to grapple with. You seem to be saying, for instance, that we should love the wrong so that we can know the right. Are you saying we must embrace the devil, so to speak?
How else do you heal him? Of course, a real devil does not exist. But I reply to you in the idiom you choose. Healing is the process of accepting all and choosing best. You understand that? You cannot choose to be God if there's nothing else to choose from.
Whoops. Oh, hold it. Who said anything about choosing to be God?
The highest feeling is perfect love, is it not?
Yes, I should think so.
Can you find a better description of God?
No, I can't.
Well, your soul seeks the highest feeling. It seeks to experience, to be, perfect love. It is perfect love, and it knows this. Yet it wishes to do more than know it. It wishes to be it in its experience. Of course, you are seeking to be God. What else did you think you were up to?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess I just never thought of it that way. There just seems to be something vaguely blasphemous about that.
Isn't it interesting that you find nothing blasphemous about seeking to be like the devil, but seeking to be like God offends you?
What? Now wait a minute. Who's seeking to be like the devil?
You are. You all are. You've even created religions that tell you that you are born in sin, that you are sinners at birth, in order to convince yourselves of your own evil. Yet if I told you you are born of God, that you are pure gods and goddesses at birth, pure love, you would reject me. All your life you have spent convincing yourself that you are bad. Not only that you are bad, but that the things you want are bad. Sex is bad, money is bad, joy is bad, power is bad, having a lot is bad, a lot of anything. Some of your religions have even got you believing that dancing is bad, music is bad, celebrating life is bad. Soon you'll agree that smiling is bad, laughing is bad, loving is bad. No, 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 my friend. You may not be very clear about many things, but about one thing you are clear. You and most of what you desire are bad. Having made this judgment about yourself, you have decided that your job is to get better. It's okay, mind you. It's the same destination in any event. It's just that there's a faster way, a shorter route, a quicker path.
Which is?
Acceptance of who and what you are right now, and demonstration of that. This is what Jesus did. It is the path of the Buddha, the way of Krishna.
The walk of every master who has appeared on the planet. And every master has likewise had the same message. What I am, you are. What I can do, you can do. These things and more shall you also do. Yet you have not listened. You have chosen instead the far more difficult path of one who thinks he is the devil, one who imagines he is evil. You say it is difficult to walk the path of Christ, to follow the teachings of the Buddha, to hold the light of Krishna, to be a master. Yet I tell you this, it is far more difficult to deny who you are than to accept it. You are goodness and mercy and compassion and understanding. You are peace and joy and light. You are forgiveness and patience, strength and courage, a helper in time of need, a comforter in time of sorrow, a healer in time of injury, a teacher in times of confusion. You are the deepest wisdom and the highest truth, the greatest peace and the grandest love. You are these things, and in moments of your life, you have known yourself as these things. Choose now to know yourself as these things always.
Whew, you inspire me.
Well, if God can inspire you, who in hell can?
Are you always this flip?
I meant that not as a flippancy. Listen to it again.
Oh, I see.
However, it would be okay if I were being flip, wouldn't it?
I don't know. I'm used to my God being a little more serious.
Well, do me a favor and don't try and contain me. By the way, do yourself the same favor. It just so happens I have a great sense of humor. I'd say you'd have to when you see what you've all done with life, wouldn't you? I mean, sometimes I have to just laugh at it. It's all right, though, because you see, I know it'll all come out all right in the end.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, you can't lose in this game. You can't go wrong. It's not part of the plan. There's no way not to get where you're going. There's no way to miss your destination. If God is your target, you're in luck, because God is so big, you can't miss.
Well, that's the big worry, of course. The big worry is that somehow we'll mess up and not get to ever see you, be with you.
You mean get to heaven?
Yes. We're all afraid of going to hell.
So you've placed yourself there to begin with in order to avoid going there. Interesting strategy.
There you go, being flip again.
I can't help it. This whole hell thing brings out the worst in me.
Good grief. You're a regular comedian.
It took you this long to find that out? You looked at the world lately?
Which brings me to another question. Why did you fix the world instead of allowing it to go straight to hell?
Why don't you?
I don't have the power.
Nonsense. You You've the power and the ability right now to end world hunger this minute, to cure diseases this instant. What if I told you your own medical profession holds back cures, refuses to approve alternative medicines and procedures because they threaten the very structure of the healing profession? What if I told you that the governments of the world do not want to end world hunger? Would you believe me?
Well, I'd have a hard time with that. I know that's the populist view, but I can't believe it's actually true. I mean, no doctor wants to deny a cure. No countryman wants to see his people die.
No individual doctor, that's true. No particular countryman, that's right. But doctoring and politicking have become institutionalized. And it's the institutions that fight these things, sometimes very subtly, sometimes even unwittingly, but inevitably. Because to those institutions, it's a matter of survival. And so to give you just one very simple and obvious example, doctors in the West deny the healing efficacies of doctors in the East because to accept them, to admit that certain alternate modalities might just provide some healing, would be to tear at the very fabric of the institution as it has structured itself. This is not malevolent, yet it is insidious. The profession doesn't do this because it is evil. It does it because it is scared. All attack is a call for help.
I read that in A Course in Miracles.
I put it there.
Boy, you have an answer for everything, don't you?
Which reminds me, we only just started getting to your questions. We were discussing how to get your life on track, how to get it to take off. I was discussing the process of creation.
Yes, and I kept interrupting.
That's all right, but let's just get back because we don't want to lose the thread of something that's very important. Life is a creation, not a discovery. You do not live each day to discover what it holds for you, but to create it. You are creating your reality every minute, probably without knowing it. Here's why that is so and how that works. I have created you in the image and likeness of God. God is the creator. You are three beings in one. You can call these three aspects of being anything you want. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Mind, body, and spirit. Superconscious, conscious, and subconscious. Creation is a process that proceeds from these three parts of your body. Put another way, you create at three levels. The tools of creation are thought, word, and deed. All creation begins with thought, proceeds from the Father. All creation then moves to word. Ask and you shall receive. Speak and it shall be done unto you. All creation is fulfilled in deed. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. That which you think of, but thereafter never speak of, creates at one level. That which you think of and speak of creates at another level. That which you think, speak, and do becomes made manifest in your reality. To think, speak, and do something which you do not truly believe is impossible. Therefore, the process of creation must include belief or knowing. This is absolute faith. This is beyond hoping. This is knowing of a certainty. By your faith shall ye be healed. Therefore, the doing part of creation always includes knowing. It is a gut-level clarity, a total certainty, a complete acceptance as reality of something. This place of knowing is a place of intense and incredible gratitude. It is a thankfulness in advance. And that, perhaps, is the biggest key to creation, to be grateful before and for the creation. Such taking for granted is not only condoned, but encouraged. It is the sure sign of mastery. All masters know in advance that the deed has been done. Celebrate and enjoy all that you create, have created. To reject any part of it is to reject a part of yourself. Whatever it is that is now presenting itself as part of your creation, own it, claim it, bless it, be thankful for it. Seek not to condemn it. God damn it. For to condemn it is to condemn yourself. If there is some aspect of creation you find you do not enjoy, bless it and simply change it. Choose again. Call forth a new reality. Think a new thought. Say a new word. Do a new thing. Do this magnificently, and the rest of the world will follow you. Ask it to. Call for it to. Say, I am the life and the way. Follow me. This is how to manifest God's will on earth as it is in heaven.
If it is all as simple as that, if these steps are all we need, why does it not work that way for more of us?
It does work that way for all of you. Some of you are using the system consciously with full awareness, and some of you are using it unconsciously without even knowing what you are doing. Some of you are walking in wakefulness, and some of you are sleepwalking. Yet all of you are creating your reality. Creating, not discovering. Using the power I have given you and the process I've just described. So you've asked when your life will take off, and I've given you the answer. You get your life to take off by first becoming very clear in your thinking about it. Think about what you want to be, do, and have. Think about it often until you are very clear about this. Then when you are very clear, think about nothing else. Imagine no other possibilities. Throw all negative thoughts out of your mental constructions. Lose all pessimism. Release all doubts. Reject all fears. Discipline your mind to hold fast to the original creative thought. When your thoughts are clear and steadfast, begin to speak them as truths. Say them out loud. Use the great command that calls forth creative power. I am. Make I am statements to others. I am is the strongest creative statement in the universe. Whatever you think, whatever you say, after the words I am, sets into motion those experiences, calls them forth, brings them to you. There is no other way the universe knows how to work. There is no other route it knows to take. The universe responds to I am as would a genie in a bottle.
You say release all doubts, reject all fears, lose all pessimism, as if you're saying, pick me up a loaf of bread. But things are easier said than done. Throw all negative thoughts out of your mental constructions. Might as well read, climb Mount Everest before lunch. It's rather a large order.
Harnessing your thoughts, exercising control over them, is not as difficult as it might seem. Neither, for that matter, is climbing Mount Everest. It's all a matter of discipline. It is a question of intent. The first step is learning to monitor your thoughts, to think about what you are thinking about. When you catch yourself thinking negative thoughts, thoughts that negate your highest idea about a thing, think again. I want you to do this literally,